This is Everyday Bravery, a podcast from Prudential. I'm Meg Wilcox.
And I'm Marilyn Bischoff. And when I was in Mexico, I had the great opportunity to save somebody's life. I'd heard the Tulum ruins overlooking the Caribbean Sea all the way to Chichen Itza was considered the eighth wonders of the world. And I thought, wow, I'm going to actually witness this firsthand. I remember I was wearing wooden clogs that day, so it wasn't really that easy. I was climbing up these huge, wide steps. So I'm climbing, and my friend and I, we were like three-fourths up, almost at the top of the pyramids. And all of a sudden, from above us, a woman, an elderly woman, fell over our heads and landed right on the edge of the cliff there. She was unconscious. Her forehead was bleeding. And I ran out to help her. And you don't stop to think if it's going to be dangerous. You know, one slip in these clogs and I'm a goner. And I just moved as fast as I could to the edge where she was fallen. And I had a red scarf around my neck that day with a white pantsuit. I took the red scarf off and tied it as tightly as I could on her forehead. I stood right over her so that she wouldn't move, because being unconscious, if she would have moved a fraction, she would have ended up in the Caribbean Sea. And I just stayed with her right until the guys from the ambulance with the stretcher brought her on down.
Despite the obvious risks of injury to herself, or worse, Marilyn played the odds and leapt into action to help a stranger out, while on vacation at that. Today on Everyday Bravery, stories of people who jumped into something with little concern for consequence. People who, whether they knew it or not, had the guts to do what it took to change a life, be it their own or that of another. Today, Everyday Bravery, Bets on You, a podcast from Prudential.
All right, so before you open them, just talk me through like what you're thinking and feeling.
Law school's hard. It's hard to get in, it's hard to graduate, and then it's hard to get a job.
Well, you have to know this is only my contract's final, which is the worst place to start.
The woman on the phone is Tracy Kumbe. She's just wrapped up her first semester of law school, and she's about to find out if she passed her toughest course.
Because I feel like I did abysmally.
When she finishes school, she'll be 48. Could be tough to figure out what happens then.
So there's a little link. You can review the assignment here.
For now, Tracy just wants to pass her first semester classes.
Okay. Should I click it? You ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
To prove to herself she's made the right choice.
Okay. Final exam score.
Tracy went through a tough year to get to this moment. She has no idea if any of what she's done is going to pay off, if she's made the right decision. Producer Colleen Pellissier traveled to Indianapolis to tell the story of Tracy's leap of faith.
Hey, girl.
Hi.
Welcome. Come on in. Where do you want to be?
I'm going to take my coat off.
Yeah, you should do that.
I took my
shoe. You look like you're all business right now.
I look like I'm all business. Tracy's the one with the I mean business look. She is very put together. She's wearing tall brown leather boots and a preppy skirt.
I love your glasses.
Thank you. She wears glasses too. A pair of retro wing-tipped ones. She looks smart. It's early December, so she's close to wrapping up her first semester.
This is going to sound deranged, but part of what I like about it is how ungodly hard it is for me.
She walks me down the hall to her study. We pass by a closed door. Thumbtacked to it is a Harry Potter poster and some cross-country race results for middle school boys.
Hello.
It's her son's room.
My name is Miles Kumbe. I am 11-year-old sixth grader.
Like me, Miles has some questions for his law school mom, but we'll come back to him a little later.
Thank you so much for listening. Bye.
Tracy's office is nice.
This is where I spend most of my time, yes.
Painted light gray, with some quirky DIY art on one wall. There's also this framed photo of Wonder Woman.
My girlfriend told me that standing in the Wonder Woman pose actually makes people do better on exams and increases their confidence. And so I popped that up.
There's a large modern wooden desk, very neat and very tidy, except for the piles of notebooks and study guides.
This is my civil procedure book. And you can see it's already destroyed with like notes and just like bent out of shape.
So Tracy is 44 years old and just started law school. That's a pretty big decision to be making. And the reason why she made that decision now has a lot to do with the room we're in. It was once Patrick's room, her ex-husband.
And at the time, of course, I was madly in love. I was swept off my feet and I was having the time of my life.
They were married in 2015, 10 months after their first date. This was Tracy's second marriage.
And it seems like we were in alignment over all of the major points that a couple would need to be in alignment over.
It was a different story at work. At the time, Tracy was working for a marketing agency, and it was slowly sucking the life out of her.
In that last year, I was feeling bored more than anything because I had been doing a lot of the same stuff over and over. And my husband was unhappy that I was unhappy and talked me into quitting my job.
Based on his advice and her own gut feeling, that's exactly what she did.
I left work officially at the beginning of March. And on April 13th, he left me.
So you heard that right. She quit her job and he left the marriage. As you can imagine, this sent Tracy into a tailspin.
When I didn't know how to deal with everything that was going on, I got super manic. And so I decided to get constantly busy studying for the LSAT, which was lovely because it was consuming, it was really hard, and gave me something that I felt like would be productive to do instead of sitting around on the sofa thinking about what just happened and crying.
She took the LSAT in late spring. She passed.
Or a little lower than I had expected, but obviously good enough.
Obviously good enough for law school. And last June, while out for a drive, she got the email telling her she had been accepted.
I will tell you, I cried a little bit. And it just seemed like such an accomplishment because everything had been so awful.
So now she's a student. She spends most of her days studying and most of her nights in class. When she got her midterm grades, they were okay. They weren't great.
I thought I did really well in my midterm and then I didn't. Did not do well. That was extremely disheartening and I had a little crisis of confidence around that. Apparently, tons of people, typically in any law school entering class, tons of people drop out after the first semester and even more after the second. And it's a high stakes challenge. So I wanted to feel like what I was doing really meant something to somebody, somewhere.
Hello?
Hello.
I have a lot of questions for Tracy and the choices she's made in her life about whether she really thinks law school is going to pan out. But I'm not alone in wondering. Remember her son, Miles.
I'm here with Tracy Kumbe.
When I met him, he insisted I let him borrow a recorder.
That's awesome. That sounds really cool.
And then he interviewed his mom.
What do you think you will do as a lawyer?
I have no earthly idea. Maybe something in education. That's my only thought so far. I don't know. I certainly don't want to be a divorce lawyer. Good God.
Where would you see yourself if your life was not in this direction that it is?
I could not have kept going the way I was going. I mean, there were good reasons to quit my job. And this is so much more exciting, even though, oh my God, it's costing so much money.
The money thing?
It's so hard.
That's actually something I had asked Tracy about earlier.
You know what I figured out? I wish I hadn't done this math, but I am living on 10% of the annual household income I had with a husband and a job. and now I'm taking on debt, and I'm trying not to let that freak me out, because what the hell? I'm just going to be dust anyway. Maybe I die with a bunch of debt. Who cares?
Why do you use death to motivate you to keep going?
That's another excellent question. So some people have asked me, like, what are you doing going to law school when you're 44? You're going to be 48 by the time you finish. What's the point? And I think of Grandpa Allen, who said, well, the time's going to go by anyway. Might as well be getting a law degree with it. Do you know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think what you're trying to say is carpe diem, which is a Roman saying that means seize the day. What seize the day is, I think, a metaphor to take control of what you want to happen in your life and make it happen with the time you still have to enjoy it.
Exactly. That's true.
Okay.
Before I left Tracy's house, I made her promise me that the second her grades were posted, that she would give me a call.
Final exam score.
The grade for her contracts class, her toughest class, came first.
I have very low expectations, and I feel like I might cry or throw up.
Okay.
Okay. Hey, okay. Wow. I got 100 out of 150 points, but I'm above average.
How do you feel?
I'm shaking, for one. Like, my hands are shaking, and you can probably hear it in my voice. And I'm so relieved.
Overall, Tracy finished her first semester of law school with A's and B's, which is pretty great, right? A nice boost of confidence as she starts her second semester.
You can't quit now. I'm the woman who decided to go to law school when she was 44. And I'm going to make this happen. I'm going to figure it out.
Tracy Kumbe is in law school in Indianapolis. No official word yet on if Miles is growing up to be a journalist. No matter what hand you're dealt in life, put your game face on and go out into the world. This is Everyday Bravery, a podcast that looks fear in the eye and doesn't blink. From Prudential. Mike Earhart and his wife Aileen own a boutique hotel in Oaxaca, Mexico. It's called Gecko Rock Resort. They literally built the place with their own hands. They used to be English teachers, living and working in South Korea. That's where they cooked up a dream to own and operate a small hotel in paradise. But their journey from dream to reality, as you're about to hear, was an expensive one, and it was a road littered with nightmares.
If you don't hear the whole backstory, if you just hear, oh, what do? Oh, Aileen and I own our own boutique beach resort. It immediately conjures up images of first that were super loaded, which were super not, and images of us lounging around by the pool in our bikinis, drinking margaritas. That's just not reality yet. It's still very much work. So we thought, you know, it would be smart before we invest our life savings, let's fly out to Mexico, take a look at the prices, see what's available. Also, Aileen had never been to Mexico, so she was just taking my word that she would like it. So we thought that'd be smart before we plant roots somewhere, possibly forever. Maybe she should visit. We got to Mexico and we told ourselves, under no conditions are you to buy anything. This is just a fact-finding mission. And next thing we know, here's the deed and we bought this property. And this moment arrives when we realize, I don't know how to build a hotel. What do we do? Fortunately, one of the neighbors at the little place where we were renting had built his own house in Mexico. So we talked to James, and he said, first thing, let's get a quote from an actual construction company. So we asked around and got a guy that was recommended. We took him out of the property, showed him what we wanted. And when he came back with the estimate and handed me the piece of paper, I looked at it. And it's one of the worst moments in my entire life. It wasn't just $100,000 more than our budget for construction. It was $100,000 more than we had total, which included the money we were going to live off of and the money to buy sheets and furniture and food and the stove and everything else you need this other than buildings. And I just wanted to puke all over him. I just saw this number and I thought, what have we done? There's no way we can do this. And so we went back, I'm talking to James, and he said, don't worry, you'll just have to do it yourself. You're gonna basically start your own construction company. You're gonna hire 3 masons and 3 ayudantes or helpers. You're gonna be on the site every day and manage the project. Yeah, so we hired these guys, and then we had to slowly figure out. He would tell us, okay, I need this much steel, this much brick, this much cement. I need this many wheelbarrows, this many buckets, this many shovels. And then we were kind of on our own to go and research where's the best place to get this stuff, build relationships with suppliers, negotiate discounts, and all of this stuff we're just kind of figuring out on the fly. And so, every day we would come out to the project and basically teach ourselves to run a construction company one day at a time. And so then it was just a process of figuring out where to cut money. You dig your own ditch. Well, there's $20. You collect cactuses out of the forest, go down to the lagoon and fill the truck with river stone for landscaping because that's free. We would go around to construction sites and take broken tiles to come and do mosaics because it was free. When we needed a staircase, I Googled how to build stairs and then just followed the instructions from the internet. Whenever we hire somebody, a plumber, electrician, we tell them, look, I'll hire you, but you've got to teach me what you do. Aileen learned how to do tile work and how to do this intricate inlaid stonework. And she'd learn it from the guy who does that for a living. So we had the crew for 9 or 10 months, and then total construction was 2.5 years. So for over a year and a half, it was just Aileen and I. I mean, I'm not going to lie. We were to the point of breaking constantly. I'd say there was probably 500 days straight that I was bleeding from somewhere in my body, broke down crying all the time. Not even like a hint of I'm a man, I shouldn't cry. No, I'm crying all the time from stress. The only thing that helped us keep going was that we had no choice. I mean, we'd already invested all of our money. So there was no option to say, I don't like this job, I quit. The darkest moment of all of it was Hurricane Carlota. So we were at this point, we were living in the property. We were staying in an unfinished room. So when the hurricane actually hit, it was terrifying. I mean, at one point, the windows were banging so hard. We grabbed the cats and the dog and got into the bathroom and shut the door because we were sure that at any minute that window was going to explode and shoot glass through the room. And yeah, you look out the window and the trees are just like being ripped out of the ground. And yeah. Fortunately, we hadn't quite got to the finish work part of the project yet. But when the hurricane hit, we definitely had enough stuff built that the damage to our landscaping and damage to a big part of the pool deck sunk into the mud. It had to be busted out. I mean, like I had to borrow a jackhammer and jackhammer out our brand new pool deck that we just paid to put in. It was just like the icing on the cake. When we got ready to open, when we were ready to take our first customers, we had $0. That's not a euphemism for a small amount of money. That was the actual amount of money we had left. I remember every day just checking the inbox and just nothing. we started to question, like, did we create something that people don't want? Our very first customers were a gay couple from Mexico City. We were crazy nervous. And we did a great job. That all worked out fine. But it was an interesting experience to be like our first ever customers. Yeah, definitely kind of nostalgic to think back on that. We asked them to do a review for us, and they said it was the best vacation they ever had in their whole life. That moment, even today, several years later, was where I know this is what we should be doing. So we're at a point now where we're growing fast enough to know it's going to work. So we're able to look back at some of these awful experiences and laugh at them. Yeah, we were definitely naive in not really believing the old Kevin Costner field of dreams, build it and they will come, but sort of believing that. And in a way, I think that's good. I think that people who do things like this, who take risks like this, have to be a little bit naive. Otherwise, you wouldn't do it.
Mike and Aileen Earhart spent their life savings and built Gecko Rock Resort, a boutique hotel in Oaxaca, Mexico. Sometimes, the smallest things in life can make us feel like the biggest, bravest people in the world. This is how it felt for Mike McMillan. Last fall, he was driving to a meeting when suddenly, on the road ahead, trouble. The kind of trouble that, if he chose to get involved, could really put a stink on his day. Well, Mike did choose to get involved, and he captured the adventure on his phone and naturally posted it to YouTube.
I just assumed when I showed this to people that, you know, if you saw an animal in the distress like this, you know, you would help too. Like, this isn't anything particularly remarkable that I've done. And an astonishing amount of people said, absolutely not. There's no way I would have done that.
Titled The Bravest Thing I've Ever Done, his video has racked up more than 4 million views. I'll let Mike tell his story from here.
I was on my way to meet the mayor of the city of Barrie, which is a city nearby, and I was dressed smartly in a suit. And as I rounded the corner off my street, I saw this kind of pathetic little skunk wandering around aimlessly with a can on his head, like it was lodged right on his head, all the way down to his neck. The can itself was from a barbecue. I believe it was to catch drippings from a barbecue or a grill. And the top had been cut off and was kind of a jagged, barbed, jagged edge that I presume kind of bit onto his fur. The skunk was clearly disoriented. He was wandering around and the can was kind of banging on the ground as he walked. And I don't know how well he could hear. He certainly couldn't see anything. I was trying to size up if I could do anything, and I think I kind of decided that I couldn't. And that's when another vehicle came by and almost ran over the skunk. And I don't know, something inside me tweaked, and I said, you know, I got to jump to action here, and I'm going to have to do something for the skunk. And that's where the movie starts, and I started recording.
Skunk, please don't spray me.
I was certain I was going to get sprayed. I went into it knowing I would get sprayed. I know how familiar you are with the smell of skunk, but once that oily, pungent odor gets seeped into your clothing, into your hair, and into your skin, I mean, it's just, it'll be there for weeks, right?
Please don't spray me. I'm not going to hurt you. Come on over here.
And my plan was, once he sprayed me, I would grab the can and pull it off and then run into the lake, because Lake Simcoe was right there, so I was just going to just run right in.
Come on over here, I'll take that off your head. Come here, skunk.
As I got closer to it, and I was kind of speaking to it in a soothing voice.
Come on over here, I'll take that off your head. Come on.
He knew, okay, well, there's somebody coming from over here.
Don't be scared, little guy. I'm going to take that off your head, okay? Please don't be scared.
my voice sounded calm, but inside my head, it was just screaming, like, what on earth are you doing? Why are you doing this, right?
That's okay, little buddy. That's okay.
There was one point where he walked towards my voice, and he walked right up in between my knees, and I decided that was going to be the moment where I was going to grab that can.
Come on over here. Let me take that off your head.
So I placed my hand on it.
It's okay. Please don't be upset.
And he felt the resistance, and then it was on.
Come on now. Come on now. Take it off your head now.
I was expecting it to just pop off, but I just tried twisting the can, and that wasn't working. Then we tried shaking, and when I say we, like, it was shaking, and I was trying to shake. Then I tried lifting. That didn't work out well because his poor little legs came off the ground, and his body weight couldn't pull it out.
Good boy. Good boy.
And then it popped off, it jumped back, and time just stopped. So there it is, the Coke cans popped off, and we're looking at each other. He turned around and then he gave me a stay of execution and scurried away into the woods. We'll live another skunk day.
Mike McMillan, willing to suffer the consequences just to give Mother Nature a helping hand. If you haven't seen the video of Mike's duet with that unfortunate skunk, you can find a link to it in the show notes for this episode. Or you can search YouTube for a video called The Bravest Thing I've Ever Done. And that's Everyday Bravery Bets on You. I'm Meg Wilcox. May you be brave in your everyday life and carpe diem, which, as Miles knows, means
take control of what you want to happen in your life and make it happen with the time you still have to enjoy it.
Everyday Bravery from Prudential. Bring your challenges.